This morning we want to take an opportunity to study about some of the trials that King David had, particularly from some cousins of his, three of them in particular, the sons of Zeruiah. Now, when we think of David and his sufferings, first and foremost, I think what comes to our minds is what he suffered for righteousness' sake at the hands of King Saul, who pursued his life day after day for so many years, trying to have David murdered because the Lord had chosen righteous David to be the next king of Israel and rejected wicked Saul. Of course, the Lord defeated all of Saul's efforts to destroy David, but we know that David was persecuted by Saul, and that went on day after day, year after year, for such a long time in David's life. And so we certainly think about that, probably number one, when we think about the sufferings that David partook of for righteousness' sake. But David did not only suffer for righteousness' sake at the hands of King Saul. There were trials on his faith brought from many different quarters. But he had three of his first cousins that were very close to him in terms of being the strength of his army, ones he depended on and trusted in to lead his soldiers in their battles that the Lord had for them to fight. And the Lord blessed David through the sons of Zeruiah and gave them many great victories to subdue David's enemies before him. But those men, though they were David's first cousins, they were wicked at heart. And because of that, they caused David great grief in his life and caused him suffering for righteousness' sake, as they caused many others to suffer too. But this became a trial for David, and we can see how David had to deal with ones that were wicked men of his own household. And we're reminded of that also because the Lord has told us in Matthew chapter 10 that a man's foes will be those of his own household. We're going to be have our own faith tried. We're going to be persecuted for righteousness' sake if we follow Christ. That is something that the Lord promises. And he lets us know that that is chiefly going to come from within our own families. And so we're going to have different ones in our families, and we all do. It may be closer as far as our relations than with some others, but it can be one's own parents or children, spouse. It can be siblings. It can be cousins. It can be others, as we know. But they're going to be those in our own families that are not going to have the same faith in God that we have, that are not going to be following Christ as we're seeking to follow him. And there are going to be some that are not following him that are going to hate us, and they're going to cause us trouble and cause us persecution because we are following Christ. Now, they may not even recognize on some occasions that what they're doing, what they're opposing us for, is because of our faith in Christ. They may ignorantly do certain things, but we're going to face trials on our faith from our family. We remember the Lord's words that he tells us that he has to be our only master. In Matthew chapter 10, he warns us about these enemies that we have. In verse 34 of Matthew 10, he says, "Think not that I'm come to send peace on earth. I come not to send peace, but a sword. For I am come to set a man at variance against his father, and the daughter against her mother, and the daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. And a man's foe shall be they of his own household. He that loveth father or mother more than me is not worthy of me, and he that loveth son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. And he that taketh not his cross and followeth after me is not worthy of me. He that findeth his life shall lose it, and he that loseth his life for my sake shall find it." And we have to lose our own life. We have to put our own selves, our old man, to death, and have our old man crucified with Christ, our old will, our old way of living that was not following Christ has to die if we're going to be followers of Christ. So that we have to have that change first of all. But when we do that, then we're going to have foes, and they will there will be some among our own household. And we have to be worthy of Christ and always choose Christ as our master, and no one else may be. And so we see an example with David in that, particularly as he had to deal with the trials that came through his family members that were his cousins, the sons of Zeruiah. By name, they were Abishai, Joab, and Asahel, those three brothers. And when we go to 1 Chronicles, to chapter 2, the book of 1 Chronicles, we find the details of the genealogy here, and this lets us know the exact relationship that David had with the sons of Zeruiah, what the family ties there. So in 1 Chronicles chapter 2 verse 12, and he's giving here the lineage of the tribe of Judah in particular, and with David's lineage in this chapter. And he said in verse 12, and Boaz begat Obed, and Obed begat Jesse. Now that, of course, echoes back or harks back to the book of Ruth. And we know in the book of Ruth that great account of how Ruth, the Moabitess, forsook the idols of her land and chose to serve Jehovah. And she came back with Naomi, her mother-in-law, both as widows to the land of Israel and to Judah. And Ruth ended up marrying Naomi's kinsman, Boaz, and they had the child Obed. Well, that Obed that was born to Ruth and Boaz that we read about in the book of Ruth was the father of Jesse and grandfather of David. And so in verse 13 it says, and Jesse begat his firstborn Eliab, and Abinadab the second, and Shema the third, Nathanael the fourth, Radai the fifth, Ozem the sixth, David the seventh, in whose sisters were Zeruiah and Abigail, and the sons of Zeruiah, Abishai and Joab and Asahel, three. And Abigail bare Amaziah, and the father of Amaziah was Jether the Ishmaelite. Now that's tying into Jesse's lineage and referring to his sisters, those two that are named there, Zeruiah and Abigail. And of course, they were the mothers of what would have been David's first cousins. Three of them by Zeruiah. And we see in verses 13 through 15, when he's giving the sons of Jesse, that the order is very particular. It would certainly seem consistent with that when he names the sons of Zeruiah, that would also be given in order, Abishai, Joab, and Asahel. Now, later we know that Joab became the captain of David's host. We might look at that the ordering here when it's given the formal genealogy and wonder why it was not Abishai. And we have some evidence for the answers to why Abishai was not the one that became the captain of the host, but it was Joab instead. But we read about more details about all three of those brothers, as well as the other first cousin of David that it names there, Amasa, who was the son of Jesse's sister Abigail, that other sister of Zeruiah. Amasa was one that ended up getting murdered, another one of Joab's victims that he got murdered when David replaced Joab with Amasa after David's son Absalom had rebelled against him. So these different names that we read about here, all of these names come up again in the history of what happened in David's reign. And these were all events that greatly impacted David and were sources of great suffering for him that he had to endure. So these we read about who those sons of Zeruiah are, that these are David's cousins. Now, Abishai, the first one mentioned there, was a very mighty man. And he was one of the chief leaders in David's army. And we read about him in 2 Samuel chapter 23, a description of him and his valor. 2 Samuel chapter 23, verses 18 and 19. And in this chapter, there's a recount, a naming of many of the close servants of David and his mighty men and deeds that they did. And so even though this is 2 Samuel 23, and with the positioning of this information, we might think that this is this is chronological and talking about events that are happening, which at this point would have been much later in David's life. But this is really more of a summary fashion, but telling us about different things that these ones did. And so these events that he's describing of these different ones in 2 Samuel 23, these ones who served David during his reign, including Abishai, it doesn't mean that these events that he names here or describes happen at this time. These were things that, in most of these cases, happened long before this time, many years before. And so with Abishai, it's telling us about him in verses 18 and 19, the kind of man he was. It says, "And Abishai, the brother of Joab, the son of Zeruiah, was chief among three. And he lifted up his spear against 300 and slew them, and had his name among three. Was he not most honorable of three? Therefore he was their captain. Howbeit he attained not unto the first three." And those were three that he had just named before that one. So there were two groups of three that he speaks of here, of those closest to David that were in his army, that were the most mighty men of valor that served under David. And Abishai was a chief of three, of the lesser three that he names there. But he was a guy that went out, and it describes there about how he went out against 300 and slew them. And so there's no lack of courage or ability that the Lord gave to Abishai. So he was certainly one of the mightiest men in Israel, and would have been one of the most feared soldiers in Israel. And that was Abishai, David's cousin. And so here was this great mighty man that served David. When David was running from Saul, in 1 Samuel chapter 26, and David had the opportunity to kill King Saul on two different occasions. One was in a cave the first time, but the second time he had opportunity to kill Saul is in chapter 26. Now, the first time he had the opportunity before, and he did not do it because he was not going to lift up his hand against the Lord's anointed. He was not going to take the life of the one that the Lord had anointed king, even though he was seeking to murder David. And it smote David's heart just to cut off a part of the skirt of his robe, which he did in the cave. Even just cutting off a piece of his clothing bothered David's conscience. But David was not going to lift up his hand against King Saul, his master, even though he was trying to murder him, when he had the opportunity to do so. Now, Abishai and everybody else that was close to David was around at that time, knew about that event. So should they have known David's position on what to do with King Saul if there was an opportunity to kill him, that would have been wicked to have lifted up one's hand against the Lord's anointed. David had already been very clear in that and had revealed himself to Saul, and Saul knew that David had spared his life and could have killed him but didn't. And Saul acknowledged the righteousness of David in that before, but of course he quickly forgot it and resumed his pursuit of David's life. And so a second opportunity comes to David to kill King Saul, which he's not going to do. But look at Abishai in this situation in 1 Samuel chapter 26. Starting in verse 1, it says, "And the Ziphites came unto Saul to Gibeah, saying, Doth not David hide himself in the hill of Hakkelah, which is before Jeshimon? Now, this is in Judah. So these are David's own countrymen. Saul is the king, but these are the people of Judah, of David's own tribe. Now, David, for many years, had been Saul's right-hand man, and he had been the one that had been the most valiant and faithful servant of Saul during the years and of Saul's reign that were early in David's life after he slew Goliath. And even after Saul became envious of David and was seeking to have David killed by the Philistines, by sending him forth to fight against them, and David prevailed over them time and time again. Then he removed him from his own table and sent him out to lead the army among the people of Israel. And all those things that he did because of his envy and hatred of David led to David becoming known among all the people and doing these deeds that all the people saw with their own eyes. And so David's name was great in all Israel. Now, of course, that would be chiefly among his own tribe. So all the people of Judah knew David and knew that David was a righteous man and had been a faithful servant of King Saul, and that Saul's pursuit of David was wicked. And if anybody would have had motivation to try to protect David as one of their own, we would think or would expect to see that among his own countrymen of the tribe of Judah. However, we know that King Saul had destroyed the city of Nob, a city of the Lord's priests, and had the Lord's priests murdered. And when he had done that, then all the other cities in Israel, and Judah in particular, learned the lesson and knew when that example was made of Nob that if they were harboring or helping David in any way, that Saul was willing to destroy them all. And so out of their fear then, they were willing to betray David. And that's what happens here. So the Ziphites betray David to King Saul. So verse 2, Saul arose and went down to the wilderness of Ziph, having 3,000 chosen men of Israel with him to seek David in the wilderness of Ziph. And Saul pitched in the hill of Hakkelah, which is before Jeshimon, by the way. But David abode in the wilderness, and he saw that Saul came after him into the wilderness. David therefore sent out spies and understood that Saul was come in very deed. And David arose and came to the place where Saul had pitched. And David beheld the place where Saul lay, and Abner, the son of Ner, the captain of his host. And Saul lay in the trench, and the people pitched round about him. Then answered David and said to Ahimelech the Hittite and to Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, brother to Joab, saying, "Who will go down with me to Saul to the camp?" And Abishai said, "I will go down with thee." So David and Abishai came to the people by night, and beheld, Saul lay sleeping within the trench, and his spear stuck in the ground at his bolster, but Abner and the people lay round about him. So we can see at this point, David is seeking among his mighty men who would go with him as one other person to accompany him to go down right there into the midst where Saul was sleeping in the camp. Would this be considered to be a dangerous mission to go on? If they were discovered there, what would happen? I mean, this would immediately lead to their deaths. Abishai volunteers immediately to go with him. So again, we see the valor of the man. We also see David sought him out along with that Ahimelech the Hittite, those two, to ask one of the two of them to volunteer, and it was Abishai. But we can see that, I mean, it was not Joab that David went to there, but Abishai. So from that, at least at this point, who might we see that David would have had his eye on or at least considered to be one that was going to end up being his captain? It certainly appears, and as he was numbered in 1 Chronicles before Joab, it appears that Abishai was the firstborn, and that David was looking to Abishai first as the leader. And it certainly looks like David would have been eyeing him or considering him to be his captain during his reign. But what does Abishai do in this situation? And it's interesting, after this, Abishai is not mentioned like this after this point, where David is looking to him first. It's going to be Joab in the chief position. Does Abishai do something here that would have lessened his esteem in the eyes of David? Well, let's read what happens. What does Abishai do in verse 8? Then said Abishai to David, God hath delivered thine enemy into thine hand this day. Now therefore let me smite him, I pray thee, with the spear, even to the earth at once, and I will not smite him the second time. And David said to Abishai, destroy him not, for who can stretch forth his hand against the Lord's anointed and be guiltless? David said furthermore, as the Lord liveth, the Lord shall smite him, or his day shall come to die, or he shall descend into battle and perish. And that's what ended up happening. Verse 11, the Lord forbid that I should stretch forth my hand against the Lord's anointed, but I pray thee, take thou now the spear that is at his bolster and the cruse of water, and let us go. So David took the spear and the cruse of water from Saul's bolster, and they got them away, and no man saw it, nor knew it, nor waked. For they were all asleep, because a deep sleep from the Lord was fallen upon them. We can see the Lord's hand in all of this, directing this situation. It was the Lord that delivered Saul into David's hand. But here was a big temptation, the second time. The temptation, and the devil is using Abishai to tempt David, kill him, kill the king. Look what happened the first time, you spared him. You spared him once, and then he continued after you. Now here's the second time. And there would be many ways to try to rationalize this, but this is the temptation to kill King Saul, the one that's pursuing David's life. And we might argue, well, if anybody would be justified to kill their enemy in a situation like this, when his enemy is trying to murder him, when he's done only righteously in serving him. But there was no justification for this. This was the Lord's anointed, and it was not in David or any man's hand to lift up his hand against the one that God anointed king of Israel and be guiltless before the Lord. David had already said that. David had already demonstrated that. So what did Abishai, what did he learn from the first time that David spared him? Well, he obviously didn't agree with with David's beliefs on this. They were not of the same heart at all. They did not have the same faith in God. And so here Abishai becomes a tool of Satan to tempt David to destroy his enemy and to lift up his hand against King Saul. David resists the temptation from the devil that came through Abishai. But it certainly appears that Abishai lost standing with David with his willingness to do that and seeking to do this to kill Saul on the second occasion when the opportunity was there. David would have clear understanding from Abishai that he doesn't agree with David. He doesn't believe what David believes and is very willing to lift up his hand against the Lord's anointed, against King Saul, to kill him. But David restrains him from doing so. But in the future, it's going to be Joab, his brother, that David makes to be his captain. Now later, Abishai, who was willing to murder King Saul, would he have any qualms about murdering someone who was in lesser standing of the people of Israel? Let's say, for example, the one that we just see mentioned here, Saul's own captain, Abner. Abishai would have no qualms about murdering Abner, Saul, the captain of Saul's host, and had a hand with his brother Joab later in doing that. Now this has to do, this the roots of that have to do with the third of the sons of Zeruiah, the one that appears to be the youngest, Azahel, in 2 Samuel chapter 2. And he was certainly one that had boldness like his brothers. So the courage was there, the boldness was there. But his skill did not match Abner's in fighting. But he certainly had a skill in running, but it did not do him any favors in this occasion, as he was seeking to kill Abner, Saul's captain. 2 Samuel chapter 2, verses 18 through 23. It says, and there were three sons of Zeruiah there, Joab and Abishai and Azahel. And Azahel was as light of foot as a wild roe. And Azahel pursued after Abner. And in going, he turned not to the right hand nor to the left from following Abner. Then Abner looked behind him and said, art thou Azahel? And he answered him, I am. Well, this seems to be similar to when Jehu, the son of Nimshi, was recognized by the way he drove his chariot. Abner could recognize Azahel by his running. I mean, here is a man that's described as being able to run like a deer. And so here comes this lightning bolt of pursuing him from behind. Abner identifies who he is. Verse 21, and Abner said to him, turn thee aside to thy right hand or to thy left, and lay thee hold on one of the young men, and take thee his armor. But Azahel would not turn aside from following of him. So does Abner want, is his mind set on killing Azahel, the cousin of David, brother of Joab and Abishai? No, he's not wanting this to happen. And he's warning him. He's trying to persuade him, don't do this. Don't keep pursuing me. Don't force this issue. But he's not going to listen. And so verse 22, it says, and Abner said again to Azahel, turn thee aside from following me. Wherefore should I smite thee to the ground? How then shall I hold up my face to Joab thy brother? He knows exactly who he is. He does not want to do this. He does not want to kill Azahel. So he warns him sternly for the second time. Verse 23, howbeit, he refused to turn aside. Wherefore Abner, with the hinder end of the spear, smote him under the fifth rib, that the spear came out behind him, and he fell down there and died in the same place. And it came to pass that as many as came to the place where Azahel fell down and died stood still. So there he was, his corpse lying there. But because he wouldn't listen to the warnings, and he continued to pursue, and perhaps he trusted in his legs that he thought that was going to somehow give him an advantage to be able to defeat Abner, who was this the captain of Saul's host. And how many battles had Abner been involved in now for his career? He's one of the mightiest men in all of Israel and experienced as a soldier. He warns him twice. And so he used Azahel's speed against him and just used the back end of his spear and killed him. But it was not what he wanted to do. Nevertheless, Joab and Abishai, his brothers, did not forget this. And later, when Abner turned to David, would repented of opposing David as king, and then sought to turn all the tribes of Israel to following David, and he gave his all in doing that. So he sincerely turned to follow David and support him as being king over all Israel. David immediately received Abner. And even though Abner had been right there, and we just read about it, he was right there next to King Saul in all of that pursuit of David. So Abner was there helping Saul pursue David. Did David hold a grudge against Abner? Could he have? Could he have said, you spent all those years, day after day, trying to help Saul kill me, and now you want to come to me and try to help me to be king and you offer your services to me? I mean, David could have ordered him killed very easily, but he didn't do that. He forgave him of all of that. He received his repentance, and he gave him the condition, though, to restore Michal, his wife, to him, which he did, and then David received him. His cousins, the remaining two sons of Zeruiah, did not. And so Abishai and Joab ended up murdering Abner. In 2 Samuel chapter 3, verses 22 through 30, it says, and behold, the servants of David and Joab came from pursuing a troop and brought in a great spoil with them. But Abner was not with David in Hebron, for he had sent him away, and he was gone in peace. When Joab and all the host that was with him were come, they told Joab, saying, Abner, the son of Ner, came to the king, and he had sent him away, and he is gone in peace. Then Joab came to the king and said, what hast thou done? Behold, Abner came unto thee. Why is it thou hast sent him away, and he is quite gone? Thou knowest Abner, the son of Ner, that he came to deceive thee, and to know thy going out and thy coming in, and to know all that thou doest. And when Joab was come out from David, he sent messengers after Abner, which brought him again from the well of Sirah, but David knew it not. And when Abner had returned to Hebron, Joab took him aside in the gate to speak with him quietly and smote him there under the fifth rib that he died for the blood of Asahel his brother. And afterward, when David heard, he said, I and my kingdom are guiltless before the Lord forever from the blood of Abner the son of Ner. Let it rest on the head of Joab and all his father's house, and let there not fail from the house of Joab one that hath an issue or that is a leper or that leaneth on a staff or that falleth on the sword or lacketh bread. So Joab and Abishai his brother slew Abner because he had slain their brother Asahel at Gibeon in the battle. So they held this grudge and would not forgive Abner, even though Abner had tried to not kill Asahel. Nevertheless, then they murdered Abner on that occasion. And David mourned him, lamented over him. Verse 33, David said, Died Abner as a fool dieth? Thy hands were not bound, nor thy feet put into fetters, as a man falleth before wicked men, so fellest thou. And all the people wept again over him. And when all the people came to cause David to eat meat while it was yet day, David swears, saying, So do God to me, and more also, if I taste bread or aught else, till the sun be down. And all the people took notice of it, and it pleased them, as whatsoever the king did pleased all the people. For all the people and all Israel understood that day that it was not of the king to slay Abner, the son of Ner. And the king said unto his servants, Know you not that there is a prince and a great man fallen this day in Israel? And I am this day weak, though anointed king. And these men, the sons of Zeruiah, be too hard for me. The Lord shall reward the doer of evil according to his wickedness. That word too hard, too severe. So David here again sees the difference between himself, his heart, and the heart of his cousins that he depends upon as the leaders of his own army. But these men are wicked. And he says, that Abner died at the hands of wicked men. And these sons of Zeruiah, his own cousins, said, they're too hard for me. And so David understood what he was dealing with these ones of his own family who did not have a heart like God's like David did. But were wicked. Now later, Abishai is sought twice to kill Shimei, the one that cursed David. Was Shimei worthy of death for doing that? Yes, he was. And eventually he did die because he did not abide by the conditions that King Solomon set for him. But David was not going to have Shimei killed, especially on the day that the Lord restored him to his throne when he came back to Jerusalem. And in 2 Samuel chapter 19, as we're going to be closing now, in verses 21 through 23, 2 Samuel 19, 21 through 23, David again expresses his vexation at having to deal with these relatives of his and their wickedness. Verse 21 of 2 Samuel 19, But Abishai the son of Zeruiah answered and said, Shall not Shimei be put to death for this because he cursed the Lord's anointed? And David said, What have I to do with you, you sons of Zeruiah, that you should this day be adversaries unto me? Shall there any man be put to death this day in Israel? For do not I know that I am this day king over Israel? And so he was refusing to have this to be the day of anyone's death or of vengeance on a day that the Lord gave him as a day of rejoicing and restoring him to his throne. But none of these righteous thoughts that David had were anything acquainted with Joab or with Abishai, his cousins. And David saw the difference. And time and again, we see him pointing out. He's pointing out to them and expressing his dismay or vexation at their wickedness, that they do not share his thoughts. They do not have a heart like his. And they were a source of great grief and persecution to David. But we know that the Lord says that, as we read, that a man's foes will be those of his own household. But with all of this evil that his own family's doing, that is affecting him and his own work, David's own work in trying to serve the Lord, and being a source of temptation for him, we see that David overcomes that time and time again. He does not ever go along with the evil of his own family members, the sons of Zeruiah and their wickedness, and he's greatly opposed to all the evil deeds that they were doing, and lets everybody know that he does not agree at all with those wicked actions of theirs. Now later, as David was pointing out, the Lord was going to bring his judgment upon them for their wickedness. And we want to spend a little bit more time looking at that endpoint, especially for Joab. And that's the one. So next time we want to focus in our study on Joab, the other son of Zeruiah, the one that is has the biggest history there as he became David's captain. But as we saw, he was involved with the murder of Abner. So he also was of their other cousin, Amasa, and also of David's son, Absalom. And so there's so many times where Joab is bringing great shame to David with his wicked deeds that ultimately the Lord judged him for. But it was such a source of tribulation for David throughout his life, these ones, his own cousins that were wicked. And so we don't want to think that King Saul was the chief source of all of David's grief in his life. He was number one for a long time when David was a young man. But if we think about these sons of Zeruiah, David had to deal with them through his entire life. And so it wasn't just concentrated for a few years and then done. This was something that perpetually plagued him through all of the years of his life. But David overcame and continued to serve the Lord and do the Lord's will in spite of the wickedness of those ones that were very close to him as relatives and as his own servants in his kingdom, but did not have righteous hearts. This is an opportunity for you this morning if you need to turn to the Lord. If you've not yet become a follower of Christ, this is an opportunity for you now to repent and be baptized in the name of Christ for the remission of your sins. If you're a member of the Lord's body, if you have gone astray from the Lord and need to return to Him, this is an opportunity for you to do that. We see a great example of Abner as one that forsook the wicked deeds that he had done before when he was pursuing a righteous man, and then he sincerely repented and he turned to do what was right. So we have lots of examples of those, and if you have that need to come back to the Lord if you've gone astray from Him, we're encouraging you to do that as well. So anyone that needs to respond to the Lord's invitation at this time, won't you come now while we stand together and sing?